So we are looking at the life of Jacob. That's why I've skipped from where we were last time in chapter 37 and we've jumped to 46, because the intervening chapters are all about Joseph. But we're studying the life of Jacob. Now, this passage particularly, chapter 46, verses 1 to 4, is actually one of the great passages of the Bible. When you think about the historical circumstances and you study the content of the passage, you realize actually what a wonderful passage this is. Let me just briefly remind you of the history around it. Jacob is now a very old man, and he has been for over 20 years without his favorite son Joseph. Over 20 years ago, his brothers took Joseph, sold him into slavery. He went into Egypt and he's been there over 20 years. And as far as Jacob knew, Joseph had died. And Jacob has been this heartbroken, grieving man for over 20 years. And he's an old man now. And when we've studied his life, we've noticed time and again that the number of times he has moved, he's been on the move several times. He went to Haran to his father Laban, and then he came back to Shechem, and then he moved to Bethel, and now he's going to go via Beersheba back, or rather he's going to go into Egypt. And obviously, he's a distressed man. I mean, you're in your advanced years. You've had a difficult life. It's been a life filled with sorrow and difficulty and suffering. And then your sons come and they say, your son Joseph is still alive and he wants you to go down to Egypt. Now, as we study this passage, we will see why Jacob had every reason to fear going into Egypt. But this is his situation. He's now a very old man, and the situation is there. Let's go down to Egypt. And Jacob, as you can imagine, is very, very apprehensive, rather fearful about this. And this is why God appears to him. Our main study is going to be verses 2 to 4, God's words to Jacob. And these are lovely words. God spoke to Jacob, or to Israel, in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob," and he said, "Here I am." Then he said, I'm God, the God of your father," and so on. So he speaks to Jacob. And it's just a reminder to us that God knows every circumstance that we are in. He knows our situation intimately. And God is our Father, and he loves us and he cares for us. He doesn't say, "Well, for goodness sake, be a man," or, yeah, "I know you're in a difficult situation, but there are other children of mine in a far more difficult situation in Afghanistan and Libya and so on. Or there are events in the world happening. I mean, you with your puny problems." God isn't like that. Okay. God is concerned about every one of us. This is the thing, of course, that we always need to remember. And later in the law of Moses, God says to the people of Israel, "I'm not a man. I'm not like you human beings. We human beings can only care for a certain number of things. We can only be concerned about a certain number of things. We can only be involved in a certain number of things. We can't be involved in everything." And it's unthinkable if, you know, every person in your family had a huge problem and they phoned and said, "I've got a massive problem. Will you come and see me?" And the moment you put down your phone, another member of the family, another member, well, you can only go to one. You can only even pray for a few. Even if you pray for everyone, you can't really meaningfully pray for every one of them. You can't enter into every situation, however much you want to. But we must always remember, God is not man. God can. God hears every prayer. God sees every child of his, every one of them. He's intimately involved in every one of our lives, intimately involved. And he loves us, and he's fully involved in every Christian's life. This is the remarkable thing about God. So here is a child of God in a distressing situation. This news has come. Joseph, your son, is alive. Well, can he believe them? For over 20 years, they've lied to him. You know, they came 20 years earlier and said, is this coat your son's coat? And he looks at it and says, yes, well, he's dead then. And for 20 plus years, they've maintained that lie. Can he now believe them? And then if he does believe them, well, what does that entail? It entails packing up everything and moving to a new country, a country that he himself has never been to. And he's, as I say, an older man. It's now a famine. So it's not the best time to move in a famine. Well, God knows this situation. And God appears to Jacob, it says, in visions of the night. It's interesting how often God appears to his people in the night. And I have wondered, is it because the night is when we are most anxious? I don't know. You know, is the night the time when we are alone, we're in our bed, and you wake up and thoughts come and all sorts of issues and anxieties come? Is that why consistently God appeared to his people in the night? But there is this pattern. It's not unique. It's not that he never appears to them in the day. He appeared to Moses in a burning bush during the day. But there are several incidents where God appears to his people in the night. And maybe it is because it was in the night that Jacob woke up and he suddenly thinks to himself, what am I doing? I'm leaving the promised land. I'm going to a land that I've never been to, a land that my grandfather Abraham went to and had problems. My father Isaac went to and had problems. I'm going to a new land. What am I going to find there? Is Joseph going to be hospitable? Is Joseph going to look after us? Or is Joseph going to be so angry with his brothers because they sold him into slavery? And will he neglect us? Will we actually live there? I can imagine all kinds of anxieties coming to Jacob. Well, God appears to him and God speaks to him in verses 2 to 4, primarily verses 3 and 4. There are three things that God does, or three things that he says, and they're all very, very precious. And if you do suffer from anxiety, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you are anxious, I would say take hold of what God has done here. The medicine that God has provided to an anxious child. Take hold of this and put it into practice in your own life. So, three things that God does. In the first place, God reminds Jacob of who he is. Okay, verse 3. Then he said, I am God, the God of your father. Now, I can imagine that is a hugely reassuring little sentence there. You know, you can almost skip it. You can almost forget. You know, you're reading through Genesis, going through chapter by chapter by chapter. We can almost just jump over this. But it's a hugely comforting, reassuring sentence that God begins with. I am God. And the Hebrew word is El. The God, the one true living God, the sovereign God, the one who rules the universe, the one who created everything, the one who holds everything in his hands. I am God. And that's, you see, he's saying to Jacob, I'm here. I am your God. You have no need to be anxious. And if you are anxious, just go back to, whose child am I? Who is my father? Remind yourself of this. Who is my father? My father is God. He is the creator. He is the ruler of the universe. He rules every element of this universe. He rules every nation. He rules every heart. Every person in this universe is under his control. The future is under his control. Everything. It is the definition of God that he rules. If God lost control, he ceases to be God. So he begins by giving him this great sentence, I am God. But then he goes on to say, the God of your father. And that again is a reminder to Jacob how gracious God has been to his forefathers. Because of course he knows Abraham's story. He knows Isaac's story. He knows that there was a time when Abraham was with his family in Ur of the Chaldees, in the comfort of his family, in his own country. Genesis 12, God appears to him and God says to him, leave your family, leave your people, leave your country, and go to a place where I'm going to show you. And Abraham, without even knowing where he was going, left. And God went with him, and God guided him, God took him to a new country, God gave him that country as a promise, and God looked after him, God gave him a son, and God looked after Abraham till he was 175. Okay. Isaac comes, and again the promises of God come to Isaac, the blessings of God, the guidance of God. Isaac went through a famine period where the enemies stopped up all the wells and he had to dig up new wells. He had these crises in his life, but God was with Isaac. So the first thing God does to his anxious child, he reminds him of who he is. And it's a great thing. When we're lying on our bed, you're anxious at any time, go to the Bible and think of God and think of the great works of God. You know, think of Moses, well, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, David, Solomon, Christ, Paul, Peter, James, John. You think of all these histories that are there in the Bible, all revealing the character of God, his loving kindness, his compassion, his mercy, his power. And it's a great antidote to anxiety. So that's the first thing that God does with Jacob. He reminds him of who he is. The second thing that he does is that he gives him a tremendous word of assurance. Still in verse 3. Then he said, I'm God, the God of your father. And then this tremendous word of assurance. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will go, I'll make you into a great nation. Okay? And I'm just looking at that first part of that sentence. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. Obviously, Jacob feared. Obviously. And God directly addresses him and says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of, I know you're afraid. And I'm addressing your fear and I'm saying, do not be afraid. And you know that phrase, fear not. God spoke that to Moses, and it's quoted in Hebrews. Jesus spoke that those words, fear not, little flock, for your Father is pleased to give the kingdom to the least of his people. You see, fear not. Okay? And God, when we are in a situation of anxiety and fear, these wonderful words of God come to us. Do not fear. Do not fear. And it's good to be reminded of that. It's good to actually memorize where these words occur. Go back to the Bible. It's not many, many, many times, but the ones that are there are very, very significant. So when you are in fear, remind yourself of Jacob. Jacob was in fear. And he had this massive challenge ahead of him. And God comes and God says to him, do not fear. Okay? And the people of Israel were in fear when they were in the wilderness. And God comes and God says, fear not, for I will be with you. I am your God and I will not desert you. The disciples of Jesus are in fear. And Jesus says, fear not, little flock, for your Father is pleased to give the kingdom to you. Fear not, fear not, fear not. And it's a wonderful word of reassurance to Jacob. So in the first place, God reminds Jacob of who he is. I am God, the God of your father. Secondly, God gives him this word of assurance. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. I wonder if Jacob feared to go to Egypt because of a prophecy in Genesis 15. God spoke some words to Abraham in Genesis 15. Genesis 15, and I'll read from verse 12. As the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And behold, dreadful and great darkness fell upon him. Then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. Now that's obviously the prophecy about Israel going into Egypt, because that is exactly what happened. They went to Egypt, they were enslaved in Egypt, they were there for 400 years, they were afflicted. And maybe Jacob didn't know which land, but Jacob feared to leave his land because he knew that there is this prophecy, my people are going to go to a land that isn't ours, in a land that is not theirs, and will be slaves and will be afflicted. I wonder if that is why he feared. Whatever the reason, Jacob obviously feared, and God gave him that word of assurance. The third thing that God does is give him four promises. So we're back to Genesis 46, and in verses 3 and 4, the second part of verse 3 into verse 4, there are four promises. Okay? Verse 3, then he said, I'm God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. That's the first promise. You won't die. Your children won't die out. Remember, there's 70 of them. Just 70 Israelites in the whole world. And God has promised Israel that all his purposes for blessing the whole world is going to come from Israel. Now, if those 70 die, and for 70 people to die in a famine, there is nothing. You know, 70 people do die in a famine. And God says, you won't die. Your people won't die. Israel is not going to die out. Okay? I'm going to make you into a great nation. That's his first promise. Second promise, verse 4, I myself will go down with you to Egypt. We often say, how many people went down to Egypt? 70, wrong, 71. Okay, God went with them. Now, isn't that wonderful? It's a reminder, God never forsakes his people. God never sends his people where he does not go with them. Okay. God never takes his people into a situation or a process or whatever, any kind of journey. God never takes us into a situation where he does not go with us. Isn't that wonderful? Okay. And you can imagine later, many centuries later, David, even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now that was Jacob's portion. I will be with you. I will go with you. You won't be on your own. You won't die on the way. You won't come to harm on the way. Nobody will attack you on the way. You won't die of starvation on the way. I will go with you. The third promise, and I will also bring you up again. Now, that is very likely a promise to his people. You know, because I think Jacob is thinking of that prophecy in Genesis 15. We're going to go to a foreign land. We're going to become slaves there. We're going to be ill-treated there. There'll be affliction. And God says, I will bring your people back to this land. And 400 plus years later, Moses came. The people of Israel came out of Egypt, went through the wilderness, and came to the land where this promise was given. And they occupied this land. So it's again a lovely promise saying, I'm here and I will look after you. And yes, there will be affliction there, but I will bring your people back. And then the fourth promise, right at the end of verse 4, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Okay. I wonder if he was thinking, is Joseph really alive? You know, and if he is alive, and they're telling me he's become prime minister, well, will he have time for me? You know, will he come and visit me? Will our relationship be a good one? Or will he be so angry with me and with my children for selling him into slavery and so on? Will he be angry? Or will he just be so busy with state affairs? Will he be taken up with Egyptian state affairs? There's famine and he's providing food for everybody. But here's this lovely promise. His hand will close your eyes. In other words, He will be with you when you die. He will visit you, and He will be compassionate towards you. He'll love you, He'll care for you, and He will close your eyes when you die. Tremendous promise, you see, to quell all His anxieties. So this is why I found this such a tremendous passage as I looked at it and thought, what wonderful words from God to an anxious child of His. I am God, the God of your father. And then the word of assurance, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. And then the four promises, I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you into Egypt. I will bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Well, we have a great God in heaven, kind and gracious and merciful and fully aware when we are anxious, and He speaks to us in our anxiety and blesses us in our anxiety. We'll pray, and then if there's another song, you can choose, and then we'll have a time of prayer. Let's pray.